This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Overheard that colleague's annoyingly loud ringtone one too many times? Couldn't care less about what the latest thing your coworker is binge-watching on Netflix? More and more of us are working in open-plan offices, which can be cost-efficient for an employer, but can, however, be a nightmare for some employees. Dr. Nick Parham, a psychologist and senior lecturer of applied psychology at Cardiff Metropolitan University, has found that sound distractions impair workers' ability to recall information and to even do basic arithmetic. He joins me now to explain more. Welcome, Nick. How are you today?
I'm not too bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks so much for joining us all the way from the UK. So, Nick, you study sound and the effect that it has on how we think and behave. Could you tell me a little bit more about what made you pursue this line of research?
I suppose it was after I finished my PhD, I was looking around and there was a grant that available that one of my colleagues was working on. Mm-hmm. And I would have been interested in that area because of speaking to my colleague over a number of years. So I applied for the grant and I worked on that grant. And that's kind of led me to conduct my own research into the general area of auditory distraction.
And your research, mental arithmetic and non-speech office noise, you know, that found that noise distractions actually affected workers' ability to perform tasks and even mental arithmetic. Could you tell me a bit more about your findings?
Yes, well, the original finding is something called what we call the irrelevant sound effect, which is where background sound impairs your ability to do a short-term memory task, which is essentially recalling a phone number. So you're presented with a list of about 9 numbers, and you have to recall them in the order in which they're presented. When you get background sound presented, you're a lot worse at doing that compared to a quiet condition, and that's called the irrelevant sound effect. There are 2 key mechanisms that need to be in place for the irrelevant sound effect to happen. One is that the task, what you're doing, must require you to remember things in order. And generally, the way we do that is to use our rehearsal mechanisms. We kind of mutter under our breath to try and remember things in order. Mm-hmm. The other thing is the sound itself must contain lots of acoustical variation. So a good example of acoustically varying noise would be talking, a conversation, or even listening to music. So if any of those 2 elements aren't present, then there's no disruption. But when those 2 elements are present, when you've got this order information in the task, that's what you're trying to do, and you've got this acoustical variation in the sound, that's where you suffer disruption. And it can be anywhere up to about 30 to 50% sometimes. So my study on mental arithmetic was taking the original findings a little step forward and looking at a much more common task that people take part in, as I said, mental arithmetic, which is obviously important in everyday life and in education. And we found that it suffers the same disruption. So when you've got sound going on in the background, mental arithmetic performance is affected.
We asked open plan office workers whether they liked their work environment and what the reasons were behind their decision.
I do not necessarily like working in an open plan office. I do find that sometimes my productivity is impaired by noise because some of the tasks that I do require deep concentration on the task at hand, especially if it's calculation and if it involves numbers, then yes, it does. And when it does, I go somewhere quieter and do my work.
So then what was the initial idea or sort of need to study noise distractions on office workers and how it affects their performance?
That was, I didn't come up with the original grant, but I think that was taken lots of laboratory findings. I think the original irrelevant sound effect was identified in the late 70s by Colin and Welsh. And obviously people have been looking at what explains that. There were lots of studies conducted in the 80s and 90s. And then it led them to look at the impact of this disruption in the laboratory and see, well, how does it affect what we actually do in everyday life? And obviously, as you've mentioned before, offices are a very common place where people work, and we all know how disruptive and how annoying certain sounds can be in the office environment. And that's where a lot of the research has been leading in terms of taking it from the laboratory and extending it to the real world.
So did you actually go into open plan offices and test workers and, you know, do that sort of field work?
No, what we tended to do was recreate the office environment in our laboratory.
Okay.
So we recreated the sounds, we recorded sounds, we mixed sounds together to have them resemble what would be a typical office sound. So we had, I remember recording computer noise, photocopiers, doors opening and closing, footsteps, conversations, etc. And we mixed them all together. And you get this kind of lots of acoustically varying sound, and that disrupts the performance.
And I'm guessing in that also was very annoying conversations.
It can be, yes. Some people manage to block it out somewhat, but sometimes it's a bit more tricky.
I can tell you honestly, I'm one of those who can't, and it's driving me mad.
Well, the interesting thing about the irrelevant sound effect is where you need this acoustically varying sound and you need the task to involve rehearsal. But other findings we found as well also show that if you're trying to do a task that requires you to use semantic information, so reading something on the screen, trying to write something, and you're ignoring sounds that involve semantic information, like you said, colleagues talking about what was on Netflix the night before, because you've got two sources of semantic information, it impairs your ability to do the reading comprehension or the task that you're doing.
Right.
So if you listen to music without any lyrics, that's not too bad for you if you're doing reading. But if you've got music with lyrics, that makes it worse. We found that as well.
So, do people perform better then with complete silence?
Generally, yes. All these studies in the laboratory, you put complete silence, people tend to perform better. There are the odd few individuals that don't. And close to quiet or close to complete silence is what we call a steady state sound, which is basically when there isn't much acoustical variation. So if you think of quiet, there's no acoustical variation there because there's no sound. But sort of static noise, white noise, or a general hubbub of noise, there's much less acoustical variation. And performance isn't quite so bad in those conditions. And I think lots of people like working in coffee shops. And I think in coffee shops, you've got a general noise going on in the background. You can't really identify what's being said or the individual sound elements going on. And people tend to be quite good in those environments.
I feel I work much better when in a very quiet atmosphere. I myself am very easily distracted, so if I really want to get down to business, I prefer it to be silent.
And like millennials, for example, they're used to multitasking, with so many distractions coming from their phones. And I suppose many have not even worked in a non-open office setting, so a closed office, if you want to call it. Do you think there's any sort of difference in the response to open offices between the generations, for example?
The interesting thing is most of the studies we conduct are on undergraduate students.
Okay.
So they are the age of sort of 18 to 25.
Right.
And this is common around the world and been common for a number of years. So I don't think it makes a difference, to be honest. It's difficult to train yourself. I think lots of people anecdotally suggest that they like listening to certain sounds or put music on when they do things.
Yeah.
But when you get in the laboratory, they perform the same as everyone else. We actually ask people, which sound do you think you did better in or worse? And people are quite wrong. When we've done studies where we let them choose the music they want to listen to, they think that because they like the music, they did better, when actually they did just as bad in music that they didn't like.
And that's very interesting, because I found that that's the problem with me as well right now. Using myself as the case example, when there's so much noise, I try to put on music that I like, but it's not helping at all.
No, I think it makes people feel, I suppose, there's a certain element of control because you've chosen the music.
Yeah.
There's a certain element of preferability because you like the song or like the music, that's great. And we know that music does increase arousal levels. So there is a phenomena that's kind of misnamed called the Mozart effect.
Yes, yes, I've heard of that.
Yes, and it should be termed the arousal and mood effect. And the general finding there is that if you get people to listen to music that they like, and get them to focus on it and attend to it before they do a task called spatial rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And spatial rotation is essentially mentally rotating a two-dimensional object in your head to see whether it matches another one.
Okay, yeah.
You probably find it on intelligence tests. There's no sound going on at that time, but because you've listened to music you like beforehand, your arousal levels have increased to an optimum level and people tend to do better. So there are effects showing that listening to music that you do like before doing a task can help. But when it's going on in the background at the same time, it doesn't seem to make much difference whatsoever. It's just as bad as music you didn't like.
My productivity is impaired by noise because it can just snap me out of what I'm doing. If I'm listening to music, that's not always so helpful because I'm suddenly focusing on the music instead of focusing on my work. So I find ambient noise is a lot better because there's no lyrics to follow.
One of your recent studies also found that reading while listening to music, especially music with lyrics, actually impairs comprehension?
That's right, yes. That's the difference. So when you're trying to process semantic information while you're reading and you're ignoring semantic information, so the lyrics from a music or even someone else having a conversation, mm-hmm. then performance is worse.
So it's the spoken lyrics, not actually the acoustical variation, impairing the productivity.
Exactly. The acoustical variation is one from the relevant sound effect, but this sort of semantic effect is where you get this confusability from the semantic information.
I guess then both pleasant and awful sounds both impact our cognitive performance? Do all have a negative impact?
If you're trying to read and you've got sound going on in the background that you can understand, so even if it's music you dislike and it's got lyrics you can understand, it will impair your performance just as bad as music you like.
I'm speaking today to Dr. Nick Parham. He is a senior lecturer of applied psychology at Cardiff Metropolitan University, and he's also a member of the British Psychological Society. And we are discussing, you know, how music and how noise actually affects us and how it can affect our work. We'll continue this discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Joining me on the line from the UK today is Dr. Nick Parham. He is a senior lecturer of applied psychology at Cardiff Metropolitan University, and he's also a member of the British Psychological Society. And we are actually discussing noise and open offices and how to, I suppose, beat that. And in your research, Nick, can preference for background music mediate the irrelevant sound effect? You found that listening to music to block out noise distractions can also interfere with short-term memory performance. So is the whole concept of open plan offices a failure in that sense?
Not necessarily. The tricky thing, obviously, with, you know, working in an environment with everyone else, you obviously want to be able to concentrate on your work without any distractions from any auditory information. I mean, visual information is not so bad. I mean, we can look away from things, we can focus on the screen, we don't get distracted quite so much.
Yeah.
Auditory information is a bit more tricky. Even when you don't want to listen to something, sometimes you can't help yourself. You know, you hear your name maybe mentioned across the other side of the room, you hear a word related to something you're interested in, a loud noise, something that interrupts you in that sense, makes it more tricky.
Back to our open plan office workers.
It's really easy to get distracted. Like, there's so many people around you that suddenly you hear a conversation and it's hard to stay focused on your work because there's so much going on around you, that I think I'm less efficient in an open plan office compared to like the previous offices I've worked in, where you have your own private space in like a cubicle, like you can fully concentrate on your work. Whereas in an open plan, it's sort of everything is a distraction and you can't get into the flow of your work.
So you want to focus on your work, but you also need to be aware that some sound information is useful to you. If there's a fire alarm going off or someone calls your name, something's going to happen. So you need this balance between being able to concentrate on your work and not be distracted, but also being open to sounds so that, you know, they might be warning you of something. So it's a tricky balance in an office environment to have this acoustical privacy, but also allow communication to occur.
As you said earlier, interestingly, the same researcher discovered that people listening to music they liked or didn't like, it made no difference to their cognitive performance, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, which sounds, in your expertise, would you recommend workers listen to block out noise, distractions, and, I guess, enhance their productivity?
I mean, obviously, trying to find a quiet environment. That's not so easy in some places. I mean, there's suggestions that maybe there are personality differences, so not much research has been done on this so far, but introverts and extroverts, because they differ in their arousal levels, introverts tend to prefer quiet environments, so maybe that they are more comfortable in quiet environments, whereas people who are more extrovert in nature might seek out more arousing sounds. So there may be individual differences there. Personally, I if I'm trying to read, I put headphones on and I put classical music on or trance music that doesn't have any lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
If I have music with songs I know, which I obviously enjoy listening to lots of the time, I find it really distracting and makes it more difficult.
So you know how we were speaking earlier about how if you listen to the music before you actually start your task, that will improve what you're doing, right?
Only on certain tasks so far. So it's okay. A different task, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's never easy in psychology, unfortunately.
All right. I mean, would you recommend people even try that if they're suffering in an open office, for example?
I think, yes. If there's a task that involves kind of spatial awareness, involving you to kind of manipulate items in your mind mentally,
mm-hmm.
Some kind of creativity, some more art-based task, then yes, it seems to suggest that if you listen to music that you like before doing that, and focus on the music, concentrate on it, your arousal levels increase, and then you switch it off, and then you go to do that task, you tend to be better. The study suggests it's sort of, it's quite short-term, it might last about 15 minutes, but it does tend to improve performance. So it might be useful for students going into exams whereby they've got, you know, more art-based exams or design-based tasks.
Okay. And I mean, can things like noise-cancelling headphones, for example, do you think that would help open-plan office workers concentrate?
It would mean that they obviously don't get to hear the other sounds. I suppose that's a good thing, so they won't get distracted by it. The tricky thing then is how much does it cut them off from other office workers that they have to communicate with?
Right.
if that is really so important, then yes, cutting down on the noise would be great if they're comfortable having headphones on.
My productivity has been impaired. When we first started, especially when we were getting used to an open office, we never really had an open office before. So once I realized that my productivity was getting impaired through noise and discussions and so on, I would usually plug my ears with a headphone and listen to my own music, something to keep me focused on what I'm doing. And at the same time, if I do need to speak with someone else, it's very simple because we are so close to each other, so we can just signal with our hands and we get the message across.
How can sound actually inflict the fight or flight response in us?
I think loud sounds can do. I remember taking part in a study where I had to see it was a small blip that occurred that moved from the right-hand side of the screen to the centre of the screen, and when it reached the centre of the screen, in the headphones I heard a sound that corresponded with the size of the blip. So if there was a small blip, a small bit of sound, not very loud sound. When there was a large blip, a really loud sound. When I'd heard the first loud sound, I could feel my body react, the kind of flights into situation. You know, the hairs on my arm stood up, my heart was racing. And then when I could see the blip occurring from the right-hand side and I knew it was going to appear and I knew there was going to be that sound, my body was reacting before it happened.
Interesting.
So sound can increase their arousal level. I mean, even if it's a good sound or a negative sound, it can increase people's arousal levels. And intensity, the volume of the sound is one way of doing that.
So how can being exposed to the fight-or-flight hormone, epinephrine, right, through repetitive noise distraction, how can that impact us, I suppose, in an open office setting as well?
Well, I suppose, I mean, your arousal levels are more increased. That may be beneficial for certain types of tasks, but I think, you know, having high levels of arousal for long periods of time probably isn't very good for you. So I can't imagine that's going to be that good for you in the long term.
I mean, I can just speak from personal experience. It starts to impact our behaviour and our mental health, but that's just me.
Well, I think you put yourself in a different mood state. And, you know, for example, if loud sounds have made you more anxious, mm-hmm. we know that people who are not even clinically anxious, people who are non-clinically anxious, they process information slightly differently. So if you're in an anxious mood, you'll tend to look out for information that's more threatening in your environment. You become hypervigilant. So it's quite possible that loud sounds make someone more anxious, and then they seek out automatically information in their environment that they deem to be threatening. So it can have knock-on effects like that.
And from your research, would you suggest closed offices are better for productivity?
I wouldn't like to say one way or the other.
Sorry, I know I put you in a spot there. Obviously, I want some answers.
I think depending on the task that you've got, so if you know that certain tasks are going to be affected by, you know, so as I said, if you've got a reading-based task, semantic processing task, it would be unwise to have lots of conversations around that person. So having areas where people can go ahead and do more reading or writing in relative quiet, I think that's really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's about understanding the interaction between the tasks that people are doing, the jobs that people are doing, and what the sounds are. And there's also a mixture of possible individual differences as well. I think when we have a better understanding, we've got quite a good understanding now, I think, but it's whether people use that information to create their open plan offices.
The biggest distraction right now for me in an open plan office would be the noise, especially in a media agency when it gets really, really busy and during deadlines, there's a huge commotion going on. And so when that happens, it gets very difficult for me to concentrate on my tasks.
What are your thoughts then on people working from home, you know, from a sound perspective? You know, can that, I suppose, work out to be a better working environment? I guess, it boils down to the individuals, right?
Exactly. I think obviously working from home, you get much more control over the environment, and you don't have lots of people walking in on you that you can't stop. So that's good. The other side is there's a tendency to put some other music on in the background, maybe. So you think you have more control and you put your own music on. So I think it's a good idea as long as you have the willpower to resist putting music on in situations when you shouldn't do.
And, I mean, studies have proven that we are about one-third less productive in open-plan offices as in quiet rooms. You know, why do you think many of us still work in them?
It's become very popular. And maybe it's, you know, maybe they're cheaper. It looks nicer. There's a certain aesthetic appeal as well with, you know, how in design and how offices are changing. So I think on one hand, it seems to look better. It seems to feel better. But that doesn't necessarily mean it actually is better for performance. And I think you need to take account of all these bits of information before designing an office. And I said that the interaction between the sound and what you're actually doing, for me, would be the most important thing.
I think open office facilitates communication because you can get the person that you want to immediately. You have full access to their attention and you don't have to wait around for them or you don't have to make appointments to get what you want from them. So it, in a way, it facilitates communication.
Do you think your research has actually helped people to rethink the open office plan at all?
I don't know whether people actually read all that book. I'd like to think they do.
I read it. We read it.
Well, that's good. Nice to know someone is. I think there are lots of people working on how signs affect performance, in mainly in laboratory findings, and those are the kind of subtle nuances of what actually is going on between the task and the sound. And I'm not sure whether designers really look into that quite so much. They're very, very influenced by the look and the feel of things. But I still think it's more important how it affects performance.
I think they do serve their original purpose, and it's because the openness is not just physical. I feel that it also creates an openness of our personalities. So everybody, since we can see each other and we're around each other physically all the time, it creates like this openness in character where we're not afraid to just behave naturally and be ourselves. So when it comes to communicating ideas and sharing our thoughts, all those communication barriers are just broken down already. Like, we don't put on airs and graces. We just see each other naturally, and it's so easy to communicate.
I think that originally their purpose was to facilitate discussion and communication in open plan offices, but then they started to become more of a playground. And if we had more areas that you can go to have these discussions and then another area to go for independent work, that might be a better idea. But right now, having an entire office that's just open is a little bit chaotic sometimes. And for people who have attention problems, it can be very overwhelming.
And, you know, if people want to learn more about your research, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, how can we read about it? And, you know, where can we get more information about it?
For anyone who's interested in any academic work, one of the first places, obviously, if you know who the academic is, you can follow, you can look at their web pages on the university page. Mm-hmm. But there's also a web page called ResearchGate, which is kind of like a Facebook for academics, I suppose.
Yeah.
And anyone can follow them. So I don't know if you've heard of that before.
Yes, I have.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad people know about it. So academics sign up on there, and the work that they published is listed there, and sometimes the work that they published is actually presented there. So you can actually download the work and read it yourself, and obviously you're more than welcome to contact academics and ask any questions that you might have.
And what are you currently working on, Nick? Are you looking more into this, or what are your areas of research at the moment?
Well, kind of looking at how the kind of sound affects people with dyslexia. That's one angle I'm interested in.
Oh, interesting.
The mental arithmetic has only been looked at slightly, so I've got lots of ideas of exploring mental arithmetic in a little bit more detail. I think that's quite a different task and suffers from different levels of disruption than the typical task that we've looked at. So that's kind of where I'm trying to look at, sort of spend my time at the moment.
But not so much anymore in open plan offices? I think you should...
Not so much. The music one, I'm still very interested in music. People really, really like the idea of music and task performance because, as you know, everyone puts music on when they're trying to work.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get people to realise that actually it's not always that beneficial.
Thank you so much, Nick. I've been speaking to Dr. Nick Parham. He is a senior lecturer of applied psychology at Cardiff Metropolitan University, and he's a member of the British Psychological Society. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.